ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अमभिं कोमलाय सर्वगात्रेषु भूरि पुण्यवद अर्पिताय.
Every part of their bodies, from their feet to the top of their heads, was decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulsi leaves, offered by devotees engaged in worshiping the Lord by the greatest pious activities, namely hearing and chanting. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The word Bhuri Punyavad Arpitai is significant in this verse. These forms of Vishnu were worshipped by those who had performed pious activities, Sukriti Bhi, for many births and who were constantly engaged in devotional service. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishno. Bhakti, devotional service, is the engagement of those who have performed highly developed pious activities. The accumulation of pious activities has already been mentioned elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Shukadeva Goswami says, Itam satam brahma sukhanubhutya Dasyam Gathanam Paradaivatena Mayashitanam Naradarakena Sakam Vijaru Kritapunja Punja. Those who are engaged in self-realization, appreciating the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, and those engaged in devotional service, accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Master, as well as those who are under the clutches of Maya, thinking the Lord an ordinary person, cannot understand that certain exalted personalities, after accumulating volumes of pious activities, are now playing with the Lord in friendship as cowherd boys. In our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, there is a tamal tree that covers an entire corner of the courtyard. Before there was a temple, the tree was lying neglected, but now it has developed very luxuriantly, covering the whole corner of the courtyard. This is a sign of Bhuri Punja. Translation. Every part of their bodies, from their feet to the top of their heads, was fully decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulsi leaves, offered by devotees engaged in worshipping the Lord by the greatest pious activities, namely hearing and chanting. Om Agyan Chimirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jenatasmoy Sri Guruve Namaha Banjakalpatarupyas Cha Kripasindupya Eva Cha Patitanam Bhavanibyo Vaishnavebyo Namo Namaha Ajanulam Vitabujo Kanakathavato Sankirtanai Kapitalo Kamalaya Taksho Vishwambaro Dijabaro Jugadharma Palo Ande Jagat Priyakaro Karunavataro Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasti Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Every part of their bodies, from their feet to the top of their heads, was fully decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulsi leaves, offered by devotees engaged in worshiping the Lord by the greatest pious activities, namely hearing and chanting. Vision of Lord Brahma, of the divine abode of Sri Vrindavan, is herein continued. The divine darshan of Krishna as he is appearing in innumerable forms of Lord Narayan is here being explained by Srila Shukadeva Goswami. And the description is explaining how the Lord is so beautifully decorated by the offerings of love given by his devotees. It is described that every part of their bodies, from their feet to the top of their heads, was fully decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulsi leaves, offered by devotees engaged in worshiping the Lord by the greatest pious activities, namely hearing and chanting. The Lord is known as Bhakta Vatsal, which means that his eternal lila is to bring joy and receive joy from the offerings of love of his devotees. And here we find the most favorite of all ways in which he decorates his body is with the offerings of the love of his devotee. Tulsi is in fact an expansion of Sri Radharani, who appears as the Lord's devotee. This most humble and faithful devotee, for the pleasure of Krishna, incarnates herself within the form of a beautiful plant. And this plant, her only ambition is to simply grow tender, fresh leaves by which the devotees can offer them in love to the Lord. How wonderful, how sublime is this contemplation, that Tulsi Maharani, her greatest pleasure is not even to serve the Lord directly, but to be in such a humble position by which each and every devotee can take her and offer to the Lord. After all, we have so many wonderful tulsi plants growing in the back of our temple. And we should know that the divine soul within that plant is growing for one singular reason: to produce fresh, tender leaves and flowers to be offered for the pleasure of Sri Gopinathji. But Tulsi herself remains in apparently a helpless condition. She appears in such a way that she cannot offer her own leaves to Krishna. She appears in such a way that she can accommodate the facility by which she can assist, actually, the devotees in offering their love to Krishna. Any preparation that is offered on the altar is properly received only when it is decorated by a tulsi leaf, placed by the hand of a sincere devotee. In fact, when I was pujari at New Vrindavan, we asked Srila Prabhupada, what is the best way that we can serve Lord Krishna? And he said that first-class deity worship simply means to offer with love and devotion tulsi leaves to the feet of the Lord. He said, if you have nothing else, that is all that is required, and the Lord will be fully satisfied. He said, you bathe the Lord with a little water and you offer tulsi leaves. That is all that is required. He said, and you can also offer chandan, and if you have the facility, you can offer crown and flute and all of these other things. But he said, first-class deity worship means to worship the Lord with tulsi leaves, to offer with love and devotion. So what a wonderful, wonderful service. Tulsi Maharani, such a supreme divine manifestation of love, that the eternal abode of the Lord is named after her, Vrindavan, the forest of Tulsi. And Krishna himself, so many names he has, they are named after her. Vrindavan Chandra, Vrindavan Nath, Vrindavan Bihari. Krishna loves to be called the names which remind him of his beloved and most blessed devotee, Tulsi Devi. And yet, what is Tulsi's position? She is simply growing in such a way, offering her leaves in such a way that she can assist the devotees in their worship and their devotion to the Lord. Even the most exalted manifestation of love takes this position of the servant of the servant of the servant. Of course, a devotee does not think in this way, but rather a devotee is thinking that Tulsi Devi is growing with such love, with such devotion. It is my service to assist her by offering the leaves and flowers for the pleasure of Krishna. In this way, a devotee considers himself or herself simply like a messenger, delivering the love of Tulsi to the feet of Krishna. That should be our meditation. But Tulsi's meditation is simply to facilitate everyone on this earth the opportunity to please Krishna, to become purified by that act of devotion of offering her leaves to the feet of the Lord. And that is why Tulsi grows on this earth, simply out of mercy upon all of us. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta purayachtuti. Because anyone who offers a Tulsi leaf with love and devotion becomes so dear to the Lord. Because we are offering love personified to the Lord. Every leaf, every flower of the Tulsi plant is the personification of the highest level of bhava, of love. Therefore, when we offer Tulsi, we are actually offering the love of Krishna's devotee. We are assisting in the lila of the reciprocation of love between Krishna and his devotee. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, it is first-class deity worship to simply offer that love. So Tulsi Maharani, so mercifully, comes to this world just to give everyone, whatever their qualification or disqualification, an opportunity to enter into this lila of love that she has with the Lord. And it is described here how much pleasure and joy the Lord experiences by being decorated from the bottom of his toes to the top of his head with the fresh, tender Tulsi leaves that are offered by his devotees. In fact, Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, who is so supremely perfect and complete in every respect, everything surrounding him is nothing but the love of his devotees. Balaramji, although an expansion of himself, appears in the role of a devotee, of a servant of Krishna. He expands himself as the whole planet of Vrindavan. The whole planet of Vrindavan is simply every molecule, the personification of the love of the Lord's devotee. And Krishna's crown, and Krishna's flute, and Krishna's garlands, and Krishna's dhoti. Whatever Krishna is decorated with, all of his jewelry, they are all either manifestations of Balaram, who is simply personifying himself as an offering of love, or his various devotees, who take these sublime forms as his decorations just to serve him with love. So in truth, Krishna is simply decorated from head to toe at all times with the love of his devotees. Vrindavan is the abode of divine love, where everything is simply a manifestation of the reciprocation of the love between the Lord and his devotees. And the entire lila of the Lord is eternally nothing but Krishna enjoying the love of his devotees. He plays upon his flute simply as a reciprocation of the love of his devotees. His every glance, his every breath, his every moment is simply to reciprocate love with his devotees. This is Vrindavan. And although his flute, his crown, there is a story of a peacock. Peacock, Krishna was playing upon his flute, and the peacock was dancing. And Krishna was so joyful to see this peacock dancing. He was glancing upon the peacock with such love. And the peacock simply was thinking, I want to offer everything to Krishna. What is the best thing I can offer to Krishna? So the peacock took the best, nicest feather. The nicest thing that the peacock had was his most beautiful feather, and placed that feather at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. And Sri Krishna was so joyful to receive this offering of love that he took that peacock feather and placed it upon his crown, and that peacock feather remains atop his crown eternally. So Krishna is simply decorated, and he loves to be decorated by the offerings of love of his devotees. But even these beautiful decorations, they are all placed upon him by Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda gives him his flute, she puts on his dhoti, she puts on the garlands and the jewelry and whatever mascara she may want to put on his eyes. In this way, everyone in Vrindavan is the servant of the servant of the servant, simply for the pleasure of Krishna. It is described here that the greatest of all pious activities is the hearing and the chanting of the Lord's holy names and glories. Shukadev Goswami previously explains that these cowherd boys who are so intimately playing with Sri Krishna, they cannot be understood their position by an ordinary living being. Even here in India, ordinary people, they are thinking that these cowherd boys are playing with Krishna. Even the Brahmins of Vrindavan were thinking like this, what is this ordinary cowherd boys? They are not very highly educated, they are not coming from such high births. What is so important about this? But Shukadev Goswami explains, due to lifetimes of heaps and heaps and heaps of the most pious activities, they have attained the chance to become the intimate personal friends of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And with no restriction whatsoever, they can enjoy the eternal lila of the Lord with him. So sometimes devotees, they become a little bewildered by this idea that pious activities? Srila Prabhupada says that the difference between mundane piety and impiety is like the difference between wet stool and dry stool. Srila Prabhupada gives us this example that a hog very much enjoys wet stool because it is succulent, full of juice and flavor. But a hog is not very inclined toward dry stool because it's just, you know, dry things have no taste, no ras, juice. So he discriminates. But a human being, for him, wet stool and dry stool, it's all stool. He really doesn't make any discrimination. So those who are like hogs, trying to enjoy material life without any understanding, experience of the sublime joy of spiritual devotional service to the Lord, such persons, they make great discrimination that if I act piously, I will get good punya, good karmic reactions, and I will enjoy. And if I act impiously, then I will have to suffer the reactions of my sins. So therefore, happiness, distress, pleasure, pain, we make great discrimination between the two and the means to achieve them or avoid them.
But for a devotee, it's all material. It's all temporary. It's all stool. It's food for the hogs. Therefore, they're always engaging themselves in the divine loving service of the Lord. But here, Shukadev Goswami is explaining what he means by pious activities.
Bhuri punyavad.
Bhuri punyavad means spiritually pious activities. Pious activities offered by devotees in love. And the greatest of all these pious activities that have been performed by these cowherd boys was the hearing and the chanting of the names and the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. This is the supreme most pious of all pious activities. Because this pious activity of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says it is the prime benediction for humanity at large. It spreads the rays of the moons of divine love for Sri Krishna. It not only purifies our own mind and our own heart, but whoever hears this divine vibration is elevated to the spiritual platform, and their heart is also purified. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that the greatest charity is to give the name of Krishna. Now, generally we consider charity to be pious. But the charity of Harinam, the charity of bhakti, is spiritual, transcendental, and it is the highest welfare work. Philanthropy is often condemned by the acharyas as being simply mundane work. But yet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, Bharata bhumite hoila manusya janma jar janma karma para upakar. He explains that every Indian, it is his birthright and his duty to spread the highest welfare work for all, to all humanity throughout the world. And what is that greatest welfare work? What is that greatest charity? To deliver the science of hearing and chanting the names and glories of the Lord to the world. So this is the type of pious activity. The supreme pious activity is surrendering to the lotus feet of the Lord by always hearing his glories and chanting his holy names. And Vrindavan is a place where every sound vibration is the hearing and the chanting of the glories of the Lord. The sound of the cricket. The cricket is simply chanting the glories of Krishna in his own way. The sound of the parakeets and the parrots and the peacocks and the monkeys. The sound of the wind. The sound of the river Jamuna as she flows. Everyone is consciously singing according to their own particular rasa of love. They are singing the glories of the Lord. And therefore, in Vrindavan, everyone, their ears are constantly drinking the ambrosial sound of the nectarine vibrations of the devotees having the kirtan. Vrindavan is simply one big kirtan, eternally. Everyone is harmonizing together. No one is separated. When the insects and the frogs, when they croak or when they chirp and when the birds sing and when the cows moo and when the peacocks, when they present their songs of love and when the wind blows, every living creature in Vrindavan
is jointly harmonizing with one another to create a beautiful kirtan of sound. And they are all chanting the holy names of Radha Gopinath. That is Vrindavan. Kirtaniya Sadahari. For there is eternal kirtan, constant kirtan. The kirtan never stops. And everyone is hearing it, and everyone is joining in. And Mother Yashoda, and Nanda Maharaj, and the gopis, and the gopas. Their constant discussion, their constant song, is simply the glorification of Sri Krishna. Therefore, they are all harmonizing together with the beautiful sounds of nature for the pleasure of Krishna. So this is why, when Srila Prabhupada was asked, what do you expect to get out of this chanting of Hare Krishna? Srila Prabhupada said, chanting Hare Krishna. What do you get? What is the goal that you ultimately want to achieve by chanting? And he said, chanting. This is what he means. In the spiritual world, eternally, everyone is hearing and chanting. It's everyone's constant meditation. And Krishna is constantly hearing and chanting. In this way, the atmosphere on every level is simply decorated with the beautiful nectarine expressions of love between Krishna and his devotees. Everyone's heart is simply surcharged, eternally increasing the current of their divine love for Sri Krishna and expressing it through every sound, through every form. I remember one time Satsarup Maharaj came to New Vrindavan and he was praising the beauty of Srila Prabhupada's palace. And Srila Bhaktipad, in much love and affection, he said that you are building a palace of words through your writing of Srila Prabhupada's Lilamrita. Huh? In other words, what Srila Bhaktipada was saying here is, yes, we are trying to decorate Krishna by decorating his representative, Srila Prabhupada. Whatever we are offering to him is actually a decoration accepted by Krishna. In fact, we started building the temple of Govindadev, and then Srila Bhaktipada was thinking, but Krishna will not accept our offerings until we first properly show our respect and our love to our spiritual master. He will accept it best in that way. So he is decorating Lord Krishna with beautiful gold leaf and beautiful marble and beautiful onyx. And it is all simply offered through the hard work and the sacrifice in love by the devotees. Even a newspaper written by Karmis, when they saw this place, they called it a labor of love. It is not a material place. There's nothing material about it. Every single molecule of Prabhupada's palace was an offering of love, an offering of sacrifice. No one was paid. Everyone simply wanted to offer their lives and express their hearts' devotion through the creating of this beautiful palace. Yes, in this way, the whole consciousness of this Krishna consciousness movement is simply to decorate Krishna, to please Krishna with whatever we do. No other motivation, no other motive, nothing. Simply giving pleasure to Krishna. This is Vrindavan. By hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord,
we are purifying our own hearts. And on the basis of the purity of the heart, which is derived by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, anything we offer to the Lord has the quality of that love, has the quality of that sincere desire. And therefore, every offering is a pleasing decoration to Krishna. Is there any questions? Yes?
Since you are saying that the goal of our life is hearing and chanting of the holy name, this is the practical problem which happens to most people who are there in the outside world, means doing a job or a business or a profession. Now, on one side, it has been said that the main goal of our life is to advance in spiritual life of hearing and chanting and all sorts of things. It's completely directly related to Krishna. The more we spend the time in our spiritual life, it so happens that we have to spend less time in our other activities. Means actively spending more time in the business or profession. And there we have to compromise as far as our business is concerned. On one side, some of the devotees, whosoever we meet it, they say that because you do spend more time in the business or profession, you earn more money. And taking more money, you are doing some service to Krishna. And that's why it is better to do that way a devotional service. But on the other hand, we have been told to spend more time on hearing and chanting. So it becomes such a bad predicament that what should we do? Spend more time into spiritual life or doing this activities? Because going over there, that attraction for Krishna or to that state completely, Krishna consciousness is completely somewhat diminished. And the goal is somewhat mingled altogether. So what should we do? Should we compromise that or should we go only on to that process? We have to do it, but we have to give more emphasis on what basis? And I would like to know.
In other words, you're thinking of becoming a brahmachari already. The grihastha ashram is an ashram of moderation. The sannyasin brahmachari ashram is the ashram of extreme hardship, extreme sacrifice, and extreme surrender. And for those rare souls who are willing to do that, it is a wonderful opportunity to give everything to Krishna. And therefore, grihasthas should very much honor and respect anyone who is willing to sincerely take to this order of life. But there is a need for both. And the grihastha ashram, we read in the Shastra, is characterized by intelligent moderation. The fact is that in your profession, it becomes devotional service. It becomes sacrifice to the extent you are Krishna conscious and offering the fruits of your labor for the pleasure of Krishna. But you have to offer the fruits of your labor in love, in devotion. Therefore, one must have a very strict sadhana. One should moderate one's life by having a very specific time every day to chant for 2 hours, to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nastaprayeshi Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavati Sevaya. It is essential to hear the Bhagavatam every day. It is essential to chant according to the vow we have made to our spiritual master every day. It is essential to invite sadhus to our home to serve them and humble ourselves before them. These are the principles of grihastha ashram, given in the scriptures and exemplified by all the great devotees of the Lord throughout history in that ashram. It is the duty of a grihastha to regularly associate with devotees. It is the duty of a grihastha to install the deity in his house and worship that deity and offer all food to that deity and make one's house a holy place. So we have these minimal devotional principles: to chant 2 hours every day, to hear the Bhagavatam every day, to offer all one's food and worship the deity of the Lord within the house, and to serve the sadhus and associate with devotees. These are 4 minimal principles that must be adhered to. And if you neglect those, then your mentality will become like a karmi. You may wear tilak on the outside, but in the inside, you will not have the proper spiritual principles to live by. So after we understand the necessities of our spirituality, and we properly nourish ourselves in that way, then we can go into the field of our profession and we could work very, very, very hard and with all of our energy. And then whatever fruits we offer to Krishna will actually be tasteful to Krishna because they will be offered with sincere devotion. But if we neglect the basic principles of sadhana, then even if we work like asses and offer millions of dollars, the fruits of those millions of dollars are not going to taste very sweet to Krishna because they cannot be offered with sincere devotion. So therefore, we must learn to moderate our life in such a way that our sadhana is strong and our working in this world is strong and full of energy, spiritual energy. And if you go if you go too extreme either way, then you will not properly make spiritual advancement. Because as a grihastha, you have a responsibility to protect your family, you have a responsibility to make offerings to the Lord through the fruits of your action. And if you neglect those things, you're not a responsible devotee. But if you neglect your sadhana, if you neglect hearing the Bhagavat, chanting the holy names, associating with devotees and worshipping the deity, then you're also not following your ashram properly. So therefore, it is the middle path. It is a path of moderation with intelligence.
Well, this question, because I think it is better to I ask in all of them, in front of all of them. There is no difference between a brahmachari or a grihastha as far as the attraction of the opposite sex is concerned. Even the brahmachari has also been attracted to opposite sex, even a grihastha is also attracted to opposite sex. And a grihastha has not been given a license altogether to be in touch with other matajis or even matajis with other prabhujis. So I just wanted to know very clearly that what is the, so to say, rules and regulations that a grihastha has to follow in talking and in associating with other matajis other than his wife. At the same time, even a mataji who is the wife of the husband, even she is also, what are the rules and regulations she has to follow in associating with Padma Prabhujis also? Because that doesn't mean that we are a grihastha, that means we can associate with all other matajis also. At the same time, even for matajis also, it is not certain that she can associate with all other prabhujis also. So what is the set of rules that we have to follow, although we become a grihastha?
Chanakya Pandit has said that one should see every woman except one's own wife as one's mother. Now for a brahmachari, he sees every woman as his mother. For a grihastha, everyone but your wife you must respect as your mother. That means we should not have casual relationships. we should have respectful relationships. That this person is a Vaishnava, this person is a devotee, this person is my mother. And as far as what is required for the discharge of our devotional service, we may have immediate communication. Otherwise, the communication should be in the congregation of devotees, that we are all sharing each other's spiritual energy. But it is not required that we have direct reciprocation with other ladies, Vaishnavis, beyond the proper discharge of our devotional service. That should be there. We should be friendly and respectful.
I was reading last night the introduction to Krishna book number 1, again. In that, it's mentioned on page number 4 that we as jivatmas covered by this material body cannot see the spiritual kingdom. And there is a unmanifested material world also, beyond the stars and the moon and the sun, which we cannot see. And then next sentence says that the unmanifested material world is beyond us, and beyond that is the spiritual kingdom, which is eternal and supreme, of which Krishna talks in Bhagavad Gita. That's the sentence. So what is this unmanifested material world? I know about the material world, which we can see. And we've read a lot about the spiritual world, which is the eternal abode of Krishna. But what is this unmanifested material world, which we cannot see?
Say that again now.
I said that I was reading yesterday the the first part you understood.
To the point, what is this?
Prabhupada says that the jivatma in the material body cannot see the unmanifested material world, beyond which there is the eternal and supreme spiritual world. So my question is, what is this unmanifested material world which we cannot see?
Between the material and spiritual.
Yes, between the gross material, which we can see, and the spiritual. And how to distinguish between the two?
There are 8 material elements. Bhumir apo nalo vayu kamano budhar eva cha ahankara itiya me bhina prakriti rashtita. The 5 gross elements can be perceived by the senses. The 3 subtle elements cannot be perceived by the senses. They are unmanifested to our gross perception. They are existing. And on that level, there is also the rakshasas, the ghostly beings. We cannot see them. But believe me, they're all over the place in Bombay. And they're affecting people's lives and they're ruling people's lives. We cannot see it. Just the divine energies and the demoniac energies that are in this world. When we chant the holy names of the Lord, that's creating a divine energy that's influencing every person's consciousness in this whole area. But when we engage in sinful activities, we are creating demoniac energy that's polluting everyone's consciousness in this entire atmosphere. Whatever we speak, Srila Prabhupada says, that sound vibration goes around the whole universe. And it affects everybody. So there are so many platforms of consciousness. Most of this material energy is unmanifested to our gross senses, but it's acting upon us. Whatever we do, whatever we think, on a subtle platform, creates an influence that affects the whole universe. These things are unmanifested. So therefore, I believe what you're speaking of, I would have to read it again, but I believe what you're speaking about is this. The various workings of the subtle energies. Yes?
These places cannot be seen with the gross material sense.
Just like Srila Prabhupada explained, even if they went to the moon, they wouldn't see anything. All they'd see is dust. Although there's beautiful mansions and celestial beings and demigods just living everywhere on that planet, why we can't see it through our telescopes? Because it's a different energy. It's a subtle energy. It's a celestial energy, which is not manifested to our gross senses. If we could see the moon as it is, we would see an incredible kingdom with palaces of jewels and palaces of marble and the most beautiful celestial denizens, goddesses and gods. Well, what do we see? We just see dust. It's there, but we cannot perceive it. So our plane of perception is very insignificant and limited. The planes of the demons, the rakshasas, is on a platform that we cannot perceive. The planes, as Sri Galima is saying, as the demigods, is on a plane that we cannot perceive. And yet the demigods and the demons are practically ruling this entire world by their diversified energies. Those demoniac beings are causing so much pollution within the hearts of others. They are controlling. And the demigods, they are controlling all the forces all around us, but we cannot see it. We can neither see them nor the forces in which they are controlling by. So most of reality, even in this material world, is unmanifested to our perception. But it is real. And it is affecting us at every moment.
There's a... just wanted to add that you were talking about Krishna consciousness being the greatest welfare work. There's one verse, it's actually spoken by the gopis, that in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, that goes, Tavakatam mitam tapta jivinam kavi bir ididam kamasapaham shravana mangalam shimanatatam buvigrinantiye burida jana. So it says that the jivas in this world are tapta, they are afflicted, tapta jivinam. And tavakatamlitam, the nectar of your pastimes, is the real auspiciousness, shravana mangalam. And those who spread it are buvigrinantiye buridajana. The word buri is used again. It means a welfare worker. So the greatest welfare work you can do for people is to give them Krishna consciousness, not simply to take care of the body. That also you can do, but ultimately to take care of the spiritual body is the ultimate welfare work. This is a quote by the gopis. It was spoken by Maharaj Prataparudra to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he took some rest in the garden, one of the gardens during the Rath Yatra route. And Lord Chaitanya, when he quoted this verse, he said, "You are the greatest welfare worker." And he embraced him very tightly.
Arivo. We took the devotees to that very place when we went to Jagannath Puri. It is called Ayatota. It's just near the Gundicha Mandir. Yes?
A lot of people in the past have left the movement. Now, is it because of a desire for sense gratification or because of lack of faith, or is it because of combination of both?
Because
a lot of people in the past have left our movement. Now, I want to know, is it because of a desire for sense gratification they leave, or because of lack of faith, or is it because of combination of both?
What was the last one?
Or is it a combination of both? Combination of both.
It is. You cannot. Everyone is an individual. You cannot say all people have left for the same purpose. It's very complex in the sense that everyone is going through their own purification. Obviously, everyone who is not a pure devotee is attached to sense gratification to some extent. If you had no desire for sense gratification, there'd be no question of ever leaving. And as far as lack of faith, faith is a gift of God. Faith is not something you can attain. Faith is something given by the grace of God. And Krishna gives faith or takes faith according to our sincerity. Most people leave the movement because either they are proud, and in their pride they offend Vaishnavas, and when they offend Vaishnavas, Krishna is displeased with them and takes away their faith, bewilders their intelligence, and casts them back into the pool of sense gratification again. Other people, due to past conditioning, they just have weak hearts. They are just so much attracted and allured by the objects of Maya. They chase after those mirages again, even after having such a wonderful opportunity for Krishna consciousness. But whatever advancement they have made is eternal to their credit. What types of purifications a person is going through and why, we may be able to understand, we may not be able to understand. But the most important thing is, how can we remain faithful in Krishna consciousness? By strictly adhering to the principles our spiritual master is giving us, to remain a humble servant, to not offend Vaishnavas, we never have to leave this movement. We never have to fall down. Yes?
As you said, one should regularly hear the Bhagavatam. But a situation may arise where you are all alone and you have a choice in front of you whether to read the Bhagavatam or hear a cassette on which the lecture is on Bhagavatam. What should we do that time?
There is no difference. Either one is perfect.
It may so happen that the purpose and all you may not be able to understand quite clearly. You may read the Bhagavatam, but the inner meaning, the depth of the realization may not be there. Like it's been said that one should hear and not read on your own the Bhagavatam. It's been said that one should hear the Bhagavatam, one should not read the Bhagavatam on your own.
But if you are reading with the purports of the great acharyas, then it is perfect. Without the purports of the acharyas, you can never understand any of these great scriptures. One more question. Yes? Huh?
So, from very childhood, I have heard in my family from my grandfather that one should not touch tulsi on Tuesday and Sunday, and he was warning us every day that you should not touch or you should not pluck any leaf of tulsi on Sunday and Tuesday for offering, or if you require for offering, you can just search out leaf which is fallen if it is urgently required. Otherwise you pluck on other days. And
we have never heard these things from our Gurudev, so
we do not take them seriously. We are following the Guru Parampara of what our Guru Maharaj has given us and how he has given us. And we don't care for what anyone else has to say in all these regards. Because everyone says everything about everything, right? And there are so many customs and so many traditions and so many rituals. If you try to follow what everybody says, you'll die out of anxiety and frustration. So we keep our life simple and simply accept what Guru Maharaj has given us and not worry about everything else. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada yasya prasada nagati kutopi. If you please your guru, your life is perfect. Huh?